This is Fresh Air. 3 years ago, fires raged in Yellowstone National Park. At first, they were allowed to burn, a decision that sparked a public debate. On one side of the issue are those who believe a let-it-burn policy is healthy for the forest. On the other side are those who, for a variety of reasons, believe firefighters should intervene. Forest fires is one of the many issues that Paul Schillery writes about. Schillery lives in Yellowstone, where he's a technical writer for the National Park Service. He's also an essayist and a naturalist. A new collection of his essays called Pregnant Bears and Crawdad Eyes have just been published. He joins us today from his home in the park. Paul Schillery, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Murray.
How much has Yellowstone been changed from the fires of 3 summers ago?
Well, I suppose visually it's been changed a great deal. It's going to be a long time before the great green vistas that were here before 1988 have restored themselves in substantial parts of the park. About a third of the park was affected in some way or other by fire. And I have to say affected rather than burned, because it wasn't all just blackened. There are a variety of kinds of forest fires, and the big crown fires, as they call them, that just blacken all the trees, probably hit about a sixth of the park. So as you drive through the park, you'll pass through extensive burns, and they are big, and then you'll pass through areas that aren't burned. It's what the ecologists call a mosaic, and the ecologists make a big point of that mosaic providing the diversity of habitats that gives the diversity of life forms Yellowstone has. I guess that's sort of the center of their argument in favor of fire.
That means someone traveling through the park will see burned tree stumps and other evidence of a real fire that's been there.
They'll see standing burned forests. They'll pass through areas sometimes as much as a mile long, maybe in some places it's longer, I'd have to think for a minute, where the trees are still standing. In a natural situation, when those trees burn, it will take 30 or 40 years for all of them that are actually dead to fall. Within the first year, you start to see green up on the forest floor. Depending on the soils and the vegetation that was there before and how much moisture you happen to get, that regrowth will be very slow, or it will be very fast. Someplace the regrowth has just been fabulous.
The controversy about whether to let the fires burn or put them out, was that settled to your satisfaction?
It's still going on, and so far it looks to me like, though it's winding along the way controversies do, often kind of slowly, it looks like it's working out so that it could be for the best of the ecological processes here, which is to say that it looks like before long we will once again be allowing at least some fires to burn. And I happen to think that's the right thing, and so I guess my answer is yes.
I think for some segments of the population, a fire is inevitably going to burn animals alive. And the question that people have is, how can other people stand by and allow animals to die?
That sort of thing reaches right to the heart of all of us. It's the same sort of thing as having a wilderness system. A place like Yellowstone, which is largely wilderness with a small W, where predators go out. You know, it's very hard the first time you see it to watch a grizzly bear take down an elk or an elk calf. But then the next minute, here come two or three grizzly bear cubs, and they are just magnificently cute animals, out of the woods for dinner. You know, that's a very complicated thing. And fire is pretty much the same way. Those fires, even if we could have stopped them in 1988, were the primary regenerative force in the Yellowstone area for thousands of years. The animals that live here have been living with those fires for a long time. But I suppose more directly to answer your question is that not all that many die. It's true that some do, especially certain kinds of small mammals, the small mammals that, say, burrow in the ground as their method of defense. Most of those probably made it. The soil doesn't get heated that deeply. They're more at risk from loss of oxygen. But the animals who are conditioned to run into a tree to hide, well, that's not the right place to go.
Are there animals that are conditioned to escape fire?
Anything that can fly will, of course. And the large mammals, which were the ones that sort of evoked the most concern in the public here during the fires, the large mammals just step aside. It was really impressive here, and a big surprise, I think, even to a lot of the biologists who work in the park and work in other similar areas, to see how calmly the elk and the bison and the other large mammals seem to take the fires. There are any number of photographs of elk out grazing in a meadow, bedded down in a meadow, while 100 yards away the forest is just raging, just all burning. They got very good at being able to do that. They weren't always successful, and it's important to be realistic about this. Fires do kill animals. The cases in the park where we actually found animals killed by these fires, especially the large animals, were where a fire was moving very fast, being pushed by high winds across a broad front, and the animals could not step aside. And in most cases then, what we found was that the fires, apparently pushing smoke ahead of them, suffocated the animals before they burned them. Of maybe 30,000 elk that live in Yellowstone in the summer, around 300 were found after the fires.
You have an essay in your book. I don't know whether you truly mean to blame it all on Bambi, but that's certainly how you begin your essay. And of course, you're talking about the movie, the Disney version of Bambi, this image of a fire devouring a forest and destroying everything in its path. You also say in this essay that Bambi teaches some pretty lousy ecology. Can you explain?
Yes, I think I know that Bambi taught me and taught many of my colleagues that fires kill everything and that fire is simply bad. Fire is a supernatural monster. And as we found here, and as the fire ecologists who had been studying this place for years before the fires had been telling us, fire is just part of the wilderness process here. It's a violent part. I think Bambi is one of the most beautiful animated movies ever made, and some of the most powerful sequences in it are those fire scenes. And that is the reaction you have when you see real fire. It's just an overwhelming thing. When you see a 200-foot-tall tree torch all at once and just light up and almost explode, it's shocking, it's stunning. But whether or not that's bad for Bambi and Bambi's little friends, and more important, for the population of Bambis that are out there and have been living in that forest for thousands of years, is another question.
I'm speaking today with Paul Schilleri. He lives in Yellowstone National Park. And a collection of his essays called Pregnant Bears and Crawdad Eyes has just been published. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Paul Schilleri is my guest. He's a writer, essayist, and naturalist, and he lives in Yellowstone National Park. How close have you ever been to a grizzly bear? Or a bear at all?
Oh, I suppose in the wild, if you spend much time here, you end up with the feeling that you were probably a lot closer than you thought, and the bear just let you go by. You know, they're very good at sort of watching you. I haven't been as close as many. I doubt that I've been closer than 50 yards to a grizzly bear out in the wild. Now, near a developed area or something like that, where a bear is hanging around near a hotel or something like that, and I'm happen to be in a car observing the bear, I've been a lot closer. I've had them walk right by my car door. That's pretty exciting.
You say there's something about bears that inspires a kind of mixture of fear and exhilaration.
There is. For example, back in the 70s, before the last small garbage dumps were closed around Yellowstone, I was one of the rangers who was monitoring grizzly bear use at one of these little dumps. We were going in every night after dark and identifying the individuals to see how many were using or were dependent upon that garbage. And to sit there in the absolute dark and have an adult grizzly bear suddenly loom up above the hood of your car and look through the windshield at you inspires all sorts of things, I assure you.
You want to be more specific?
Well, you don't feel like your Audubon Society membership is much protection at that point. You know?
Well, are bears any more a threat to visitors to the park than any other animal? I mean, any other animal that has big teeth and nails?
No, the animal that injures the most people in Yellowstone these days is the bison. Far more injuries from bison than from bears.
Are these bison, that attack people?
Well, what happens, this is one of the points that I hope I'm making in that book, that we've gotten ourselves removed enough from these animals that when we actually do see them in something like a natural setting, we hardly know what to do. And Yellowstone, to many people coming from urban areas, looks a lot like a wild animal park, a tame animal park. And these bison that are grazing along the roads are by no means tame. They're just a little more used to seeing people, so they don't run around and run away when the people come up. Routinely, what happens here a lot is that a person will get out of their car and they're conditioned, this is my theory on this, they're conditioned by the wonderful photography in the Nature magazine and by all the wonderful photography on the nature programs on television to want to fill the frame of their camera with that animal. Now, they don't realize that the people who were shooting all of those beautiful photographs were using telescopes and telephoto lenses the sizes of a cruise missile. You know, they have tremendous big lenses. And so they get really close. People will walk right up to a bison. A bull bison weighs a ton. It can run 30 miles an hour. And if it wants you, it has you. And every now and then, somebody will get too close, and finally something will snap in that marvelous prehistoric bovine mind, and the bison will feel threatened. And if the person's only 3 feet away, the bison may very casually just flip that big head toward the person and put a big hole in the person with its horn. So we're always passing out leaflets to people, stay back, stay back. I guess they look a lot like cows.
How much traffic or even public interest can the park withstand before it becomes something else? Before it becomes, I guess, a theme park.
We're still figuring out how much effect people have here. People have had a huge effect. This place has had more than 100 million visitors now in the last century. And we've got hundreds of miles of roads, more than 1,000 miles of maintained trails. And as I say, every year, 2 to 3 million people come here. They generate a lot of garbage, sewage, law enforcement situations, all sorts of things go on here. So we're not talking about something that has ever, since it was established, been perfectly primitive, or that the managers have ever thought should be perfectly primitive. It really is a question of how much you dare risk. My own view of it is that, at best, we are dangerously close to losing important things. The universal view, I think, among the scientists these days, about the grizzly bear, for example, is that these days in Yellowstone and in the surrounding country, the grizzly bear's doing pretty well. Grizzly bears are very good at making more grizzly bears if we give them the room to do that. But the long-term prospects, say 30 or 40 or 50 years, are really gloomy because more and more people want to enjoy not just the park but the country around it, what's called the Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem. There's more and more development, timber harvest, all of those things that people have a perfect right to do, but that cumulatively are changing what Yellowstone is.
How long have you lived in the park?
I've been here about 3 years this time. I first lived here in 72. I worked here in the 70s as a ranger naturalist for several years.
What's your view out your window?
My view out my window, in the foreground, I live in a small building that's actually an apartment building. It has about, I guess, a dozen different apartments in it. In the foreground, there's a little lane that's shaded by some evergreen trees. There's a dumpster, very urban sort of thing, except this is a dumpster unlike any you've ever seen because it's bear-proof. It has a funny little turrets sticking up on top that bears are unable to figure out how to open and reach into.
Yet.
Then there's a hill that drops off down to a river valley, and about a mile to the east there's a long, beautiful mountain with a lot of lodgepole pine trees on top and open bare slopes on the bottom. It's a very steep slope.
Would you trade that view for anything else?
No. Nothing I've seen, anyway.
Paul Chaleri, thank you for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Paul Chaleri lives in Yellowstone National Park. His book is called Pregnant Bears and Crawdad Eyes. This is Fresh Air.